Cheap ass, huh?
Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, Damas y Caballeros.
Welcome back to another edition of Leaving the Ring Radio. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Mr. Gabriel Montoya. Hey, we have a lot of stuff to talk about here on Leaving the Ring, Gabriel. A lot of news popped up. I had a chance to listen to Monday night, the next round, and I got to tell you, man, I'm a little afraid right now to say that I enjoyed the Terrence Crawford fight, man. It was really like the RNC of boxing podcasts on Monday night. A lot of hate and anger towards Crawford, man.
And I was all Rudy Giuliani, right? I was just screaming. It was just an angry skull.
Angry.
The boring
just
fighters
like, hey,
coming
forward. We can't have this again. We've been going through this for the last 8 years. We can't do this no more. No to Mayweather. And then everybody would cheer. No, mate, lock him up. Lock him up, you know? Anyways, great show. A lot of great calls. A lot of points that callers and fans alone are just, you know, dotting across the board about post Mayweather. You know, I mean, I think that's the major fear here because, you know, being that I'm out in the field, I get a chance to talk to different various amount of people that enjoy the sport, and they're kind of getting back into the sport because of PBC, because they're having a chance to watch it on free television, supposedly, right? Quote unquote. And a lot of them before they would ask me, like, hey, you know, are you going to get the fight? Are you going to watch it? And I was like, yeah, I am. And even talking to one of my compadres, Pablo, I asked him, I said, hey, man, so did you like the fight? And he said, yeah, dude, I enjoyed it. Then I asked other folks, and before they even answered the question if they enjoyed it or if they didn't, Gabriel, the immediate answer from them was, I don't like the cockiness that guy brings in the ring. And they didn't like the fact that he hurt him and wouldn't take him out. So I asked him, if you would have took all that out, the tongue, the laughing, the shrugging your shoulders and making a mockery of Postal because he had to do something he's never really done, which is be the stalker of the two. He took that scenario away, and the fact that he did hurt him, he didn't capitalize it or anything. Would you have enjoyed the fight? And the majority of folks said yes. And then the less majority of folks said, no, I still wouldn't have liked it because, you know, I guess that left a scar. Because of the tactics of Floyd, I think a lot of people are looking at Crawford that he could fall into that trap and become the next Floyd Mayweather, which is, you know, fight safe, look good, get the win, and be really cocky about it. I want to hear your thought. I heard a little bit about what you said on the next round, but I'd like to hear a little bit more in depth of how you felt about it. I'll bring you my input, and then obviously we'll let our callers, you know, tap into the whole debate or review. Go for it.
I mean, the thing of it is the fight's supposed to be not a showcase. You know, it's a test. You know, I didn't. Obviously, the fight played out like a 6-1 or a +600 kind of fight for, you know, Terrence Crawford being the favorite. But going in, I think we all agree that this was a tough test. I mean, Postol is not a knockout puncher, but he's like Chinese water torture. You know, he's just constantly at you, constantly, you know, giving you a 1-2, giving you the jab, changing it up, mixing in hard punches, and wearing you down, digging to your body.
Right.
And Crawford had been, you know, he's been in tough fights or kind of puzzles, and then he seems to figure it out and then dominate, walk down his opponents, but they've all either been his size or smaller. And so I thought, okay, we're going to find out just how good this guy really is. You know, he looks to be the real deal. He looks to be a killer, but it's kind of like Mikey Garcia looked to be great. But when do we get to see him in a real test? And to me, the first four rounds are pretty tight, right? You could say that they're even. And then Crawford takes off. He has that spectacular fifth that just really seems to derail Postol. But they're kind of funky knockdowns.
Right.
It's a flash knockdown, that first, you know, the first one in the round, like the first punch hit of the fifth. Postol goes down, doesn't seem to be hurt. The second time, he does seem to be caught in between, you know, in an exchange, and he kind of, you know, bounds off to the other side of the ring, kind of awkward. He's not. I've noticed that in, you know, in the.
When did you start
fight,
getting
get
bored?
Caught.
Let me ask you that. Let me ask you that. When, at what point did you say, okay, this is not going to go anywhere. This is a boring fight, and
the
I'm
rest,
done.
I would say after the second knockdown, in the fifth, mm-hmm. kind of leaning forward, like, okay, what else is going to happen? I would say from then on, it went from being, okay, this is kind of tight, to, oh, okay, that happened. Oh, I guess he's going to just be too fast, be too sharp, and take him out. And then it was like, and even in those first kind of tight rounds, I'll give a fight like the first quarter. You know, it's a 12-round fight, so it's going to have stages, and I'm good with that. And it was going to uh-huh. be tactical because it's at the top. I'm good with that. But there's tight and, like, two guys engaged and trying to hit each other and it kick something off or take the lead, you know, establish the jab, you know, and win that battle, take that off. What I felt with Crawford, and I was kind of bored in the first four rounds, even though I was, like I said, I kind of give that a pass generally, was that when he wasn't, it was like he was constantly not engaging. When he decided not to be fighting, it was like he was all the way out. And then he kind of come in and do some things, and then he'd be all the way out. It just doesn't, okay, you're faster than the other guy. You're fleeter of foot. So you're a bad matchup for the guy. But at some point, like, it becomes less like you're elusive and more like you're just avoiding a fight for long stretches of time. And after the fifth, it seemed like, okay, I could touch you, I can hurt you, and I'm also way up on points after a 10-7. And it just didn't seem – it wasn't very exciting to me. It was a guy that didn't really want to have a fight. He knew that this is all he needed to do to win.
I got to disagree with you. I'm going to give you my points of what I thought, okay? Here was a guy that I got to eat crow because I picked Victor Postol to take this one. I thought that being the tall, lanky guy and who could fight in the inside and, you know, really know how to use – he really knows how to use his jab to keep range and how to – find the, you know, pockets to throw punches in, was everything was taken away. And the reason why everything was taken away in that first and second round, what I saw with Crawford was trying to get a guy to commit to something he normally doesn't do. And a lot of times that's, to me, that's like a lost art, is to make the other guy believe, because we saw what Crawford has been able to do with the lesser opponents and smaller guys. He you know, within that second round, he knows he's the stronger and bigger guy, and he goes for it. What I saw with Crawford was he understood that he was going up against a bigger guy, taller guy, and a guy that really could catch him coming inside as well. As we saw in the – I believe it was the third round, he caught Crawford a few times, I think twice in a row with a right hand. So what I started to watch after that was – a guy that started setting traps, you know, made himself walk backwards and made the other guy believe I could trap him when we got to the ropes. And then he would spin off and catch him with a counter punch. Now, I thought the whole time, too, the reason why he made sure he kept moving, Gabriel, was because we saw on the 12th round that when he did engage, he was getting clipped a lot. I actually gave the 12th round to Postol because I thought Postol was getting the better of the two exchanges between each other.
I did, too. Yeah, he landed like four good right hands.
Yeah, he had, you know, and I saw right there immediately that they had an understanding that Postol's best chance of winning the fight is by him engaging and being there too long for the receipt. So instead of doing that, they opt to say, hey, we're the better guys, we're the better boxer, we're the smarter guys, because obviously the amount of time to train, you know, Roach wasn't going to have enough time to change the dots or stripes of this leopard or whatever he had in his gym, Postol. 3 months, 4 months, even 5 months. It's not enough time to change a guy's way of dancing to a rhythm of a beat. And we saw that. We saw exactly that. Postol was clueless, man. He didn't know how to cut off the ring. People pointed that out. They said, he doesn't even know how to cut off the ring. Well, of course, he's never been the aggressor. When he got in with Matisse, when he got in with Hank Lundy, when he got in with numerous different guys, he was never the aggressor. He was the guy that stood back and allowed the other person to commit to mistakes. That's the beauty that I like with Crawford. I can't take that away from him, because when I witnessed Laura fight Canelo, we had the same type of fight, a guy coming forward and the other guy making the other guy pay for it. So I wonder this. If Crawford would have knocked him out after that fourth round, jumped all over him, I just get the sense that folks would have been like, well, they just proves my point. It should not have been on pay-per-view. Should not have been in HBO. But instead, he opted to box, be fleet of foot, like have you said right now. And to me, I just see that there's folks that are still upset about it. I want to give the guy credit of what he's performed and how he did it. Now, is it pay-per-view worthy? It wasn't from the beginning, but I did thought that this was a great matchup. In terms of two undefeated guys, and I'll stick to what I've said before in the past, this was a super fight in my opinion. It's up to both guys. They're going to make that clash into something super. Crawford was just that much better, and knowing I could make this a really, really tough fight, a really close fight, or I could make this a shutout. And I got to give him kudos.
Well,
he shut out Postal. Go ahead.
He also had everything on his side. You know, I mean, they're the same promoter, but this was, you know, there wasn't Victor Postol, My Life, on HBO. Everybody's trying to make this guy. They're talking about him being the Pacquiao favorite. Everything is really in his corner. And one of the things that struck me, because I watched the fight like three times now, is that Tony Weeks, how much difference a ref can make. In other fights, Postol works on the inside. He'll hook one arm and work with the other side. From the very beginning in this fight, Tony Weeks is going, break. Anytime they stop for a second when they come together, he's in there to break him. But in those early exchanges, Terrence Crawford is getting off some good shots on the inside. And Postol even looks at Weeks at one point, like second round maybe, like, what the fuck? Like, can we work inside or are we breaking? And are you going to talk to him or what the fuck? And you could see all that kind of work against him. He was very much in his head. But we talked about this in the next round, and I really believe this with a lot of fights. When a guy's full intent is to be completely elusive, is it really that incumbent on the other guy to completely sell himself out in order to get it done? Some guys do that, and that's great. But it's usually in an aggressive fight where they've been some back and forth. I mean, how many punches were landed around, dude? This is the thing. It could be masterful, and I'm not disagreeing that it was skillful. I picked Postol as well, and my guy got taken to the woodshed. But don't tell me that it was entertaining to watch. And I won't
I found
tell
it
you
entertaining.
That it was boring,
I tell you the reason. Look, Roach.
I just
I mean,
don't.
Roach,
I just didn't.
Roach's job is to adjust his guy. He was telling this guy the right things in terms of if he's an aggressive fighter. Hey, you got to throw more punches. You can't wait for him. Never once did I hear Roach go, listen, we're fighting this guy's fight. We're fighting the wrong fight. Stop coming forward. Let him dictate it. Switch it around. You know, make him come to you. That's what should have been across the board from the beginning. From the start, from round one, I saw Postol with a big Postol round one. You can't tell me that he got in there and immediately he looked like the more confident guy. He actually believed I'm the bigger puncher than you are because you're moving backwards. That's where the sucker came in. It's his fault that he got the S on his forehead because Crawford allowed him to believe he was the bigger puncher. And I think that's where everything fell apart, Gable. My opinion, that's where everything fell apart. After that, Postol didn't know how to step off the gas. He just kept pushing on the gas to see how far he can go down the road, when in reality, he should have stopped and just let the road come to him, which is, you know, Crawford. But he never did that. Until the 12th round, we kind of saw them decide, let's both go forward, let's both make a clash, and we're going to have a wreck. And we did. We saw a nice little bit of a wreck, but just not enough. It was a fender bender, nothing
God,
else.
How much worse of a fight would it have been if Postol, because they were fighting that battle early on of who's going to lead in a sense. I mean, Postol was establishing the jab kind of like, I want to be first. But it wasn't like fully committed to like hyper-aggression, you know. It was just like kind of closing in on him. But if he would have decided to try to make, what a horrible fight that would have been. That's the thing.
I think
he was trying to make the fight.
My sense is this, and I think this, but this is my sense, okay? But we all expected a certain type of fight because of those guys' style. And I think this is why we were so excited, not myself, not just you, but a lot of folks were excited about this fight. I didn't really hear a lot of folks in the beginning or late of this fight announcement, getting close to the fight, complaints about paying for this fight, you know. But I think what happened is that we expected a certain thing, and Crawford decided, I'm going to switch it all up. I'm just going to be the boxer, and I'm going to look good at doing it, and this is how it's going to play out. I think that's where the fans have become upset, because they were expecting some really real exchanges. They were expecting a dominant a performance in terms of a knockout with that lead. Instead, they just got a dominant performance, you know.
Well, I mean, here's the thing, is that what they were marketed, if I don't know if you watched My Life, I did. They were marketed a guy that's stopping people.
Oh, yes.
A guy that's exciting, that's the next great thing. And then they were asked, based on that marketing pitch, to pay money to see him on pay-per-view or live. And what they got is a guy that said, and I quote, I could have stepped on the gas, but why? I had him figured out after the third. And then he went on to knock him down, and he still didn't press on the gas. So, like, what I saw matches that quote. So that was my gripe with the fight. It's kind of like,
Let's pass it to some fight fans here. If you want to call in 347-215-7598, let's hear your thoughts. Boring, or did you find it exciting, or what other reason did you have that about Crawford? I get everything that you're saying, Gabriel. I'm listening to what everybody's saying. I just think that
Making me mad.
I know.
Need to make boxing great again, Dave.
God damn it.
Need to make boxing great again.
Trust me. I'm building a wall. 812, you're on live right now, leaving the ring. What's on your mind?
Hey, Dave, how you doing? This is Joe, man, from Indiana.
What up, Joe?
What's up, Joe?
How you doing, man?
Yeah, good,
so you
man.
Bought
Dave,
the fight.
I bought the fight, right?
I
bought the fight, man. Yeah.
And what do you think?
Yeah,
what do you think? What was your take, man?
Let me be honest, man.
Go for it.
I was real excited the intros, the first couple rounds, but man, it didn't feel like a pay-per-view main event to me. I was waiting for it. Like you just nailed it on the coffin. Like you said it earlier. I forgot you said we expected something else, but we didn't get that. And I think that's where I fell in. Like even when you watch the previews, right when you order the fight, they keep showing previews of the fight. They were showing commercials of fight fans have always wanted a big fight and throwback to the 80s type of fight. And I guess I fell into that hype. And I think not to take nothing away from Crawford's performance. I mean, he boxed well, he ran the fight, controlled the fight, but I think I was looking for something that wasn't there. And I was expecting fireworks, I was expecting more knockdowns and back-and-forth action. And I was like, okay, is the 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, when is this going to come? And I think I just had my expectations a little too high. I don't know if I just bought into the hype.
You're right. I think that's what it is. We all bought into the hype, but we end up getting a masterful performance without any real drama in the script. I completely understand that. Trust me, I understand that. And I understand I can hear the frustration in fans when they're saying, look, the whole Mayweather, post-Mayweather deal is that we don't need another Mayweather back in the ring. We don't need another Broner. We need a guy that's going to go out there and give us the value of dollar when we pay for entertainment. I understand that. But two, I just get the sense that this guy knew he can get himself in a great pickle with a tall, big postal if he decided to leave that opportunity and didn't want it. My take is this. He's looking for that for sure Pacquiao fight. He's looking for those bigger fights. So he opted out to go to become the businessman, not the real fighter, and say, I'm not going to chance it. I mean, this guy can land that right hand. This guy can really make this into a hard fight if I allowed it. And thank God his legs were completely conditioned. But I also, too, I think a lot of fight fans are turned off by his camp. I mean, I know I am. I don't like it. I just don't like camps that talk too much. You know what I mean?
Yeah, Gabe, I know you. I was listening in on Monday. I tried calling in, but I just had an emergency come up at work. But what did Crawford's camp do? Like, did they literally cut off, the media the day before the fight or something? Or I know he's getting a lot of heat for that. I'm not sure what happened. Do you guys know about that?
Actually, I haven't had a chance to talk to Steve about it. I talked to him on the show. He didn't seem to want to talk about it on the show. Jake from Rochester asked him about it. I saw on his Twitter feed that it seemed like there was some back and forth. A friend of mine was there, the guy that carried the ring at my wedding, was there.
Okay.
And he says that Steve didn't get in their face first. that they got him bodied up on. I don't know if bodied up, that's my word, not his, that they got in his face first. He was like, you know, and so I trust John. But we didn't even really talk about it. I mean,
yeah.
That's why I tweeted, like, there are many reasons why I don't miss Vegas. That's one of them. It's just nobody needs to be in a bar after a fight or before a fight. Bad things can happen. Although it is one of the, you know, the night before the fight at the bar is actually pretty awesome. But stuff like that, you know, I mean, nobody needs to be fighting. We're all here to fight fighters, you know.
Dave, I will say this, though. I mean, I like the opening bout, and even the my favorite fight of the card was Santana Benavidez. I just, like, you know, I told this to another friend of mine. Santana is the reason why I love boxing. I mean, just he comes in, and he just the determination he had of not giving up. I mean, he was taking some good shots early, but he kept coming in and coming at Benavidez, and I really thought he at least did enough for a draw. And I was kind of upset that one judge just, man, I forgot what it was, 100 to 90 or something. But
Bird had an
Adelaide Bird.
Adelaide Bird had a bird eye view. Let me tell you this. She had a bird eye view from somewhere. It wasn't close to the ring and stuff, man. Hey, let me ask you really quick before we let you go.
Was she on some Molly or something? She's having some
scene? She had volume. She was, you know.
Jesus.
So there was some really good volume going that were getting passed around to the judges that night. Joe, really quick before I let you go, who's your pick on the Santa Cruz versus Carl Fratman? What do you got, man?
Okay, I'm not gonna lie, man. I'm becoming more of a UK fan, a groupie, man. I'm jumping on the UK bandwagon as of late. Like I'm going with Brooke, and I just follow them fighters. Just for shits and giggles, I'm gonna go for Frampton. But if my money was on it, Leo right now just seems on a whole nother level,
You're going with Frampton.
No,
tell me why.
Yeah.
Tell me why. I want to pick.
Yeah,
Frampton,
baby.
I picked Huntsville last week, man. I can't. I can't do it twice.
I think he can edge out a close decision just for if he has. Me, if he displays great defense, because you know Santa Cruz is on those punches and volumes. So if he can just counter off and, you know, just work off that jab
can he pull Crawford? That's basically what he's got to do. Can he do the Crawford?
That was just gonna
Saturday
say,
night.
Yeah,
you
last
know?
Week, you know, everybody went with Crawford. And this week, everybody's picking the tall guy who hasn't really beaten anybody. Modest was a close win.
Yeah, he won't be able to do the Crawford because, unlike Postal, you know, Leo's going to come and throw.
Oh, Leo's going to throw a lot of punches.
200 punches a round, yeah.
Right.
So I'm excited. You know what? That's one thing, real quick, Dave. Can I just burn on this
Go
real
for
quick?
It.
It's like, as
Go
boxing
ahead.
Fans, we're getting caught in the middle of this because we got this nice five card fight coming up. If you Showtime Extreme and then Showtime Regular, it's going to have five fights total this week. And all you got to do is pay $10 a month for your Showtime subscription. Okay, the week before that, we had the Deontay Wilder plus the undercards on NBC Sportsnet. It's like we're getting a lot of these free fights, and then we get thrown in with the pay-per-view. So it's just, for me as a boxing fan, it's like, man, it's got me scratching my head like, should I keep ordering these pay-per-views or just, you know, take back and see what's given to me? I mean, it's for the first time ever, I'm questioning it because it's like
I'm shaky.
Yeah.
I'm shaky because of what happened with Crawford. He switched the script on us. He became a boxer and a purist at that. That I'm hoping that Andre Ward doesn't do that with Kovalev. I'm hoping we see a little bit more engagement. With those two. But, Joe, I'm going to put you on hold again, brother. We got to pass this more five fans on here, man.
You guys are going to talk about Berto Garcia later, right?
Oh, yes, we are, man.
Oh,
can't let that one
okay.
go.
Okay.
All right, Joe,
you guys take care. Take care, guys.
You too, brother. You too.
All right.
Let's get another caller in really quick. Five fans, you want to call in, certainly can. 347-205-7598. Carl Fratman. Dude. Yeah, baby.
You know, Fratman comes alive. I really want to pick him, but I'm just not going to. I'm trying to be disciplined and go with the chalk.
I'm going to ride the wave. I'm riding the wave of Santa Cruz. You know, I've always enjoyed the boardwalk and the beach, and I don't see why this is going to be any different. I think Santa Cruz is just
I like
Frampton, just too,
though.
I do too. I like.
You know, I've been on that train for a while, but I just.
I remember.
He got knocked down by that kid, the Gonzalez, you know, twice, and it didn't. Now, granted, he was fighting over here for like the second time.
Right.
But first time in a long time, you know, in a different climate, different food, all kinds of shit happens, and you maybe make weight a little bit different, don't feel as good. So maybe that was a wake up call. Maybe that would be a great experience for him, because he did come back and take over in the back end of that fight. People remember the beginning of the fight because there was the knockdowns, but he came on and dominated, and it was that stick and move. But the kid was more of a boxer. I mean, Santa Cruz just comes
out
and
what I saw with Quigg was that he put pressure on him, but the pressure was just coming forward and no punches. Which we saw, you know, Frampton was able to handle it. I would say, you know, 50-50, it wasn't that much. And I don't know if his punches are enough to keep off of Santa Cruz. Because Santa Cruz is going to get clipped a lot, in my opinion. But in between the exchanges, Santa Cruz is going to throw a lot of body shots. And he's going to be right there. And I don't know if there's going to be enough time for Frampton to spin off the ropes to be safe, because Santa Cruz's style is a wave, you know, and it's just going to take every time the wave comes into the beach, man, it's going to take a little bit away of that sand. And I just see that happening in those late rounds. That sixth round, if he makes it to that sixth round, which I think he will, because he is a condition and you know, he's a pro at what he does. But that sixth round to me is going to be the tale of what's going to happen on the 7th and 8th. Because if you see a guy that looks beat already, then we know that Santa Cruz is just going to be able to just bulldozer over him. But if we see him kind of still being fresh, being competitive, and able to keep up with Santa Cruz in the exchanges, then we got a real fight, Gabriel. That's what I'm thinking. I'm hoping we have a real good fight between these two, but my picks is going to be Santa Cruz.
Yeah, I just, you know... Will his power translate? This is a guy jumping up and, you know, and weight 4 pounds. And again, maybe he gets dropped at 122 because he was having trouble making the weight. Now he gets 4 pounds. Maybe Frampton a little stronger, a little more refreshed. He's not that old, you know, and he's got less.
He's not that old, but 4 pounds is a big difference too, though. Got to see if it's balanced out, you know. So we'll see.
Yeah.
Saturday night.
I mean, he looks gigantic when he after making weight. They even say that as we're watching the Gonzalez fight. They're like, Jesus, look at the difference in from making weight to. I think he's ready to be a 26. I hope it's a great fight. I think it's going to be the fight.
Oh, me too.
That Quigg and Frampton wasn't. You know, we could get Margarito Cotto, but little guys.
Ooh.
I hope.
Let's pass to another fight fan here on the show. Let's go. Area code 805. You're on live right now. Leave the ring. What's on your mind? 805.
Hello, gentlemen. This is Armando from Oxnard. Thank you for taking my call.
Armando, ¿qué pasó, brother? How you doing, man?
¿Cómo estamos? ¿Todo bien? Just calling about the fight. I was hiding in a hole at work, but they kind of found me, so I had to go somewhere else. Sorry about that. I just wanted to talk about the fight on Saturday since I was there in Las Vegas that night.
Go for it, brother.
I figured the winner of the night was Little Valdez, or Valdez, who got
Valdez,
the KO win. Yeah, that was a real nice win for him. The crowd went wild. You know what happens when you have a bunch of drunk Mexicans in the crowd?
Oh, yeah.
Then,
definitely.
During the Postolin Crawford fight, it started off real good. There was a nice backing. Nebraska was definitely in the house. I think a bunch of people wearing Nebraska hats, big red all over the place. So it was probably about 85% full by the main event. There was like a few seats open here and there.
Right.
There was a nice Ukrainian crowd for Postal. They had a nice little
section.
Crowd for themselves. It was nice. It was hype. It kind of felt like a little soccer match, kind of. But during the fight, I guess, you know, the pro Crawford crowd sees no wrong in him during the fight. But as the fight went on, there was more and more boos coming in. You know how Mexicans get when they're drunk and don't see no action in the fight. They just start booing anything.
So, well, good thing he wasn't on a Mexican stage. Good thing he wasn't on a Mexican stage. It would have been bottles and beers and, you know, churros, all kinds of shit being thrown in that ring, man.
Ooh,
but so let me ask you, man. After the whole fight, what was the reaction? What kind of reaction did you see from the people leaving the arena?
Shit. When I was leaving, people were more happy to see Abel Sanchez walk by than fucking talk about the fight.
Really?
shit. No lie there. Fuck. But I guess the pro Nebraska was very happy with Crawford since he got the win,
right,
and all that. But the general public, people like me who had no dog in the fight, we were kind of like, eh. I was like,
right,
oh, I was glad I was there. But if I were to pay for it on pay-per-view, I definitely would have been pissed. So I understand the backlash on that. That was something to think about.
You know what? Let me tell you this. I paid for it, and I wasn't really upset. I'm honest. I wasn't upset at all because I enjoyed the fight. But it wasn't the only way I would have been pissed, let me tell you this, is if I brought a bunch of friends over and hyped it up the way I have hyped it up here on the show because I was excited about this fight. And because I know the majority of guys that I know that I invite to my house to watch the fights, they're not really boxing fans. You know?
Yeah, sir.
They're
casual,
not going to care
casual.
For. Yeah, they're casuals. They're not going to really care for the masterful performance at Crawford.
Yeah,
exactly. They're going to sit there. I mean, people would have been. I was excited about Oscar Valdez. I loved it. I was honestly, he put the faith back in the Mexican fighters for me because I was just like, thank God we got something right now that we can look forward to in the future because Mexico hasn't been producing guys. But, you know, in the last couple of years, they haven't really got pushed anybody out for us yet, you know?
I think it's somebody besides Canelo now with us Mexicans. So
that's
pretty much how it's going.
Especially anybody besides Canelo and Chavez Jr.
Yeah. Oh, that fucking puto needs to stop tweeting and just fucking work out and make weight. But that's one of the fucking stories. Oh, fuck, man. Shit.
That's hilarious.
Dude,
that's
like
Instagram, dude.
Hey, that vato needs a wall built around him. Let me tell you that, dude.
Keep him in the training camp.
I have no fucking idea who's more like conscious with the Twitter account, Canelo or fucking that puto Junior? Because both of these guys that just post things and they get backlash, but they keep thinking the public loves them. So it's like, yeah. I guess as a Mexican, I still root for him, but. As a boxing fan,
it's done.
Kind
it's
of
over.
Pissed me off.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yes,
I mean, look, Oscar Valdez to me is a guy that I would campaign making Mexican fighters great again. I would sport that hat because that's the guy that he looks like. He's right now, that's what I'm getting off of him because of the whole Chavez Jr. and Canelo. So I'm with you on that, definitely,
yes,
and stuff. But
yes, sir.
You know.
But what really got the crowd mad was that Santana scorecard. That really pissed the public off. Everybody
right.
was mad about that. Especially that lady who called it 90-80. I don't know what the fuck fight she was watching.
Right. Well, like I said, she had a bird eye view.
That was awful. But I got to give Santana props. Since it's up from Oxnard and we're close to Santa Barbara,
right.
he had a lot of fans out there himself. He sold a lot of tickets. I give him a lot of props for that.
Yeah. You know, the thing with Santana, man, is I think that first round, when his face got really red up, I was just like, oh, okay, he's in for a long night. You know, I'm not sure you know what I mean? I wasn't sure even the determination was going to get him through this fight or get him the win. I know, Gable, you had him winning, but I saw a completely different fight. I thought he lost that fight. I just thought when Jose wanted to be Benavidez, he was Benavidez.
Yeah, when he wanted to fight, he fought. But
he fought, exactly. Oh,
yeah.
Major break.
He disappeared in the middle of the fight. I had either like a draw or I could see a Santana win. I guess you could see it the other way, but I just felt like Benavidez disappeared after the second round. And while Santana, guys with no power, they always get docked for not having any power, even if they try to make up for it with effort. And
oh, absolutely.
After a while, I think Santana was slapping, but deep in the fight, like he carried a lot of the middle of the fight. Somebody
he sure did. He was out working him.
Dude, you know, like somebody needs to tell him, Jose, you're not good off the ropes. I don't know.
Well, his dad told him. You know?
Yeah, get off the rope. I could hear it from fucking from the
top. He used to slap him like Tito. He get slapped by his dad. Get off the ropes.
Yeah. I can tell you this. If I was there live at the fights in Las Vegas, if I would have brought my old lady would have said, I thought we came to see a fight, not David Copperfield do tricks. Because Jose disappeared.
It's the rope-a-dope. It's the rope-a-dope and everything, and you got to respect that tactic. But, like, I think maybe he needs to go to 47. Because it's clear. It was like he came out with authority, and then he had, like, two rounds in him, and all of a sudden it was like
he was sucking air.
Yeah.
Bro, he was sucking air after the third or fourth round. You could see him. He was literally gasping. He looked like a fish out of water. It was kind of crazy.
Yeah, like, dude, you guys are doing something wrong with his body.
All right, Armando, thanks for calling in, brother. Hey, well, really quick, though.
Thank you, sir.
Who's your pick? Who's your pick for Santa Cruz and Frampton, dude? Really quick.
Man, I want to pick Frampton, but since I went to the Santa Cruz and Morris fight, he made me look pretty stupid by picking Morris, so I got to go Santa Cruz.
There you go, Santa Cruz.
Mm-hmm. But the talk of the night is Mikey Garcia. Sorry about that, fellas.
We'll get to him. Absolutely. We'll get to him, man.
Thank you for taking my call, and you guys have a great show.
You too, man.
Thank you.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Playboys.
So there you go. Fight fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598. We're going to have a little bit of a short show today because we're covering everything pretty quick here. I think we covered the Jose Benavides with this caller here now. I think we both gave out our thoughts about that fight there. Oscar Valdez, though, really quick, what are your thoughts about him, man? Are you as excited as everybody else is, or are you still kind of up in the air about it?
I really like him, I really like his trainer, Manny Robles. You know, we've liked him since he was with the Matadors.
The LA Matadors,
yeah. Smart young coach, a lot of energy, a lot of ideas, just knows the basics. But, you can't argue with this performance. I've had it on during the show, Oscar Valdez. You can't argue with how good he was, but I still think they could tighten things down. He's still, like, when you miss or he makes you miss, he's using more energy than he needs to. I think overall he could, like, when he learns to be a little more smooth, a little more economical, and, you know, he wings big shots in the middle of the air. You know, let's see him in 6, 7, and 8 of a dogfight.
I always like to see
– like?
Right.
You know?
I always like to see the other side of the coin of a fighter. And that's something – what were you going to say? What was that, Gabriel? What did you say right now?
I said, but I really like him a lot. I mean, the kid's got the goods.
He looks
– you know, he's got that thing. People want to watch him. He's fun to watch get it done. And aesthetically pleasing. The punches are nice, you know. And what a fucking finish, you know. So
absolutely.
Good.
The guy that even stepped in the ring, I mean, literally, the guy looked like he was just like, holy shit. Like, what am I doing here? Like, what did I do? I came in with an undefeated record, but this guy's punching me like an undefeated fighter. And I think Oscar, what he showed to us is that even what a record that – and an unknown guy, he's going to come out and he's going to perform. But here's the thing. I always like to see the two sides of the coin of a fighter. And I got that with Crawford. I was able to see the first side of the coin, which is a guy that can make things exciting, go out there, and you know, if he can out-muscle you, out-punch you, he's a stronger guy, he's going to do that. But if he can't, he's going to box you. My worry about this, though, is that if Valdez is to make a performance at Crawford, Lee, what happens there? What does he go from there? Because I honestly believe, Gabriel, he needs something like that. He needs somebody that's bigger than him that can possibly – make him feel that I can't always use my strength on you. I can't always throw, a 4 to 6 punch combination. I have to box. I got to put in some rounds because there's a possibility I can get clipped, caught, and dropped, and knocked out. So that's the lead that I like to see him go into next. We need to see him get in there tougher. I say 2-3 more fights, then we get him in with some really tough oppositions out there in the ring.
Yeah, no, but I love the go for broke. It's just, you know, you got to temper a little bit. You could see, and really a lot of it is like, I love the approach, everything. But it's just like big movements, too much, making a guy miss by too much. You can tighten things up and probably even set up more offense that way, you know. But no, I really like what they're doing. That whole stable that Manny Robles has got, you know, maybe we should get him on the show because it's strong, man.
Absolutely. It is really strong stuff, you know. So after the performance of Terrence Crawford, the big talks is Manny Pacquiao. Freddie Roach obviously has kind of killed that little bit noise and stuff. I even tweeted out immediately after that. I was like, I don't look. Even in the talks about it, and Fight Fans now want to see this fight, I was like, if I was Freddie Roach, why would I want to make this fight at 140? Like, why would I give any – in the past with Manny Pacquiao, they have always gotten away with what they want. They're the A-list. Is he that much of a B-list right now that he can't ask for 147 or he has to bend to the will of what Crawford wants? Even off of this performance, the numbers are not even there. I know the numbers are not going to be there. So the majority of fans and people tuning in for the return of Manny Pacquiao obviously has to weigh heavy on his favor, right, Gabriel?
Yeah, I don't understand. I'm not really even sure. You know, okay, the Floyd fight was a dud, but, you know, what's the common denominator, you know, with Floyd boring fights? You know, it's Floyd. Pacquiao is usually in exciting fights. Like, I didn't, Steve and I had talked about this. I didn't really understand the calls for, like, let boxing move past Manny Pacquiao.
Hmm.
I mean, he's still in good fights. You know,
yeah.
he still seems to want to fight.
I see a different fight. I see a totally different fight.
Crawford,
I think
I don't know, but I don't see why Crawford. I can understand why he's like, I'm not going to call anybody out. I don't need to do that. Totally understand that. It's a great way to roll.
Right.
But, Manny Pacquiao is still Manny Pacquiao. And that's just not going to change. So I think Freddie Roach doesn't want that fight, though.
I don't blame him, but I think too. Also, fight fans got to remember that most guys they skipped 140 to become a superstar. Crawford to me at 140 right now, really there's nothing there. 135, 140, there's really nothing there to prove anymore. I think you need to jump to 147. There's bigger fights, bigger possible fights, and just bigger names for you to develop and be the guy, the it factor, if that's what you're looking for, as in terms of the pay-per-view cow, you know. So I say forget the fight at 140. If you really want it, you go after 147. And let me tell you this too. Throw out the whole scenario that Bradley and him won't happen because they're friends. Dude, I'm sick of that. There's no reason these guys shouldn't mix it up. You know, I mean, the passing of the guard. Bradley should want that fight. Bradley should say yes to that fight if it was to happen, just because the fact that I think it's a good way of marketing yourself at 147, because if you can't get a Floyd Mayweather and you can't get Manny Pacquiao, it's either Jesse Vargas or Bradley at the moment for me. I don't know who you think would be a good name there for him to establish himself as a real threat at 147, but those two guys, I know some folks at Jesse Vargas, you know, I don't know about that. They're even, you know, already discrediting the Vargas and Pacquiao fight. But the truth is Vargas has made some statements. Vargas has showed that he's got power. Yeah, he's not the most reliable guy of implicating a plan that's going to be guaranteed. But you got to give him his props in terms of if you like Santana, you got to like Vargas because the guy does keep trying. The will of trying to win is definitely on the wall. It's written on the wall with this kid.
I'd go Jesse Vargas. He's in active fights. He's coming off a big win. Why not Jesse Vargas? He's marketable. He gives good interview.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I could see the HBO special now. He'd do very well starring in something like that. Why not Jesse Vargas? I mean,
why not?
I guarantee you it's a better fight than Crawford Postol was. You know, it's going to be exciting. And maybe more competitive than Triple G versus Kell Brook. Liam Smith versus Saul Alvarez, it's a dark horse pick to be a tough fight. I think, it's going to be 12 rounds.
12 rounds, yeah. Yeah, I'm with you on that. I don't know. You got Margarito facing his older brother as well and stuff. And I still believe that Margarito is in for that sweepstake with Canelo. I think that was going to be the next fight if Margarito can get past his older brother, which is up in the air because if he can get licensed as well. Because it's up in the air. I mean, his last performance with who was the kid that he fought, Junior? God, Willis. Well, his last performance, he got dropped. It was pretty nasty. Who's the kid? Wow. Refresh my memory here, Gabriel. The kid's name. Was it Paez Jr.?
Yeah, Paez Jr. Yeah.
Yeah, it was Paez Jr. Yeah. And, you know, he was there. He's still the same guy in terms of throwing punches. Yeah. But his jaw is not what it used to be. This guy was able to eat and swallow punches when they were thrown at him and they land. This is a different guy, different beast, an older beast. So we have to see because his older brother is a live dog. It's not going to be a rollover type of deal here. He's really going to have to fight for it if he wants that Canelo a sweepstake. And I've said this, Canelo can pick and choose whoever he wants because his fan base is going to support it regardless. They just want to see his guy win. That's it. You know? That's why I'm so refreshed with Oscar Valdez. You know, this guy looks the part the way they marketed Canelo. You know, Valdez to me is going to make Mexican fighters look great again. That's the hat that I'm going
to
campaign.
There's something about Leo Santa Cruz's style that just doesn't really appeal to me. You know, as
he reminds
a Mexican fighter.
Right. He reminds me a little bit of Margarito, but not as heavy-handed.
Who I was never really – right. Who I was never that big on. That's that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a volume puncher guy, you know. Although Margarito Cotto is one of the most brilliant, like brutal fights I've ever seen.
Right.
You know, and have been at. I mean, it's just something else. I don't believe Margarito cheated in that fight. Cotto fought the wrong fight, and it was a bad matchup for him.
Bad matchup for him, and he had been hurt prior. We can get into that in a segment. We've done it numerous times and stuff, but I want to move away from all that. I want to talk a little bit about Danny Garcia and Andre Berto. This is a talk. They're saying this fight may happen in September. Immediately on Twitter and social media world, this is not a very favorable fight here. Steve Kim, though, tweeted out that he's not that bad. He's actually interested in that fight. I got to tell you, I'm not. I don't want to see Berto again. I know he knocked out Victor Ortiz, but Victor was made to serve for Berto. If any fighter right now was going to make Berto look great or, you know, competitive, Victor Ortiz is the guy that you're going to serve or you're going to put him up against and stuff. And that's exactly what he did. The only thing that I think that can make it interesting is if Danny Garcia takes him very light, which is a strong possibility. He takes Berto very light, Gabriel. And he makes it a lot tougher than it's supposed to because we've seen him do that in the past. We've seen Danny Garcia make fights a lot tougher than they're supposed to look. On paper, he's supposed to be the guy that comes out and does the job with his right hand. But in the ring, guess what? We end up getting a 160 because he either didn't train well or he just kind of just fell in love with his power.
Berto, it's hard to say. I mean, well, he just doesn't fight that often. And he just
doesn't throw that often either.
Jesus.
Doesn't throw punches that often.
Older.
You know what I mean? Right.
Yeah, he's gotten older and just tighter. But then, you know, the older you get, I think the rustier you get. And he's gun shy. He doesn't want to get knocked out. He's extra careful. He knows who he is. Maybe, you know, a more experienced Berto is not as exciting as he used to be. I mean, it's a guy that he's kind of like Khan. Flawed. But always kind of compelling in a weird way. I've watched this fight, and I got to be honest. When he knocked out Victor Ortiz, I assumed this fight would be next.
They said it
on one of these shows. Right. So like, it's sort of like I said on this show in the next round that I've just resigned myself to the fact that I'm not going to be satisfied by an Al Haymon fighter. Like their career, you know, I'm going to be frustrated by it. And it's kind of freeing, you know? And so I feel the same way about this fight. Like I just knew we were going to get this. Boxing fans, Danny Garcia is going to frustrate you as much as Floyd frustrated you.
I think that's just it. That's what exactly I was going to say. The expectations from PBC fighters, I don't know why we have any for them. They're going to do what they want. It's going to happen. They're going to give us
the
fight.
Al wants.
Yeah, what Al wants and what Al feels fit for the moment, that's what's going to be put up for us. And guess what? We're just going to have to settle for it. You know, meaning that, you know, got to get used to it. Thurman and Porter is only going to come maybe once or twice out of the year for them, you know. And, I mean, he's trying to stretch out his business plan here. So trying to keep the guys satisfied with the O and not lose it so he can market them into something bigger. And that's the whole plan here.
Well,
you know, I mean.
Here's the thing. If Danny Garcia sucks as bad as his detractors say, they shouldn't have a problem with this fight then. Because Berto will just get hit him, right, and just knock him out.
Right. That's true.
People
that is
shit
absolutely
on Danny
true.
Garcia so much. Then, you know, the guy is coming off a win. He's a former welterweight champion. It's kind of a natural thing that happens. I have no problem with the fight.
I just think that most folks wanted to see Thurman and Garcia, 147.
Hmm.
You know, that's the fight that – well, yeah, that's next year. You know, and I think that, you know, I think, like always, fans are in a bit of a rush. But at the same time, look how long it's been that we've really gotten something that we wanted from the PBC. So I understand. I can hear the frustration. I understand the frustration coming from the fans and stuff. But, like, again, I think you have to have low expectations with PBC. And because when it does give us something good, then I think that's when we're like, okay, this is great. Let's just have it and stuff. I think the more you ignore these guys and make them irrelevant, I think that's when you're going to see better fights.
It's what you've alluded to with your joke about the next round being, you know, TNR or being
the RNC.
And this being the DNC.
Yeah.
But if you look at the way everybody else does boxing versus the PBC, who's really growing the sport? I mean, I think K2 are great ambassadors for the sport, like Triple G and K2. But the fights, you know, I mean, you could grouse about them. They're not competitive. And for whatever reason, however many interviews they do about we can't get anybody to, you know, for X amount of dollars, whatever, it's still kind of indicative of what everybody else does, what Top Rank does, A-sides against guys we're going to beat, you know?
Right.
Kovalev and Ward are both fighting those kind of fights, and they're also promoters, right? So all those guys
right.
do that, and they want boxing to be fractured and a free market. And then you've got Al, who wanted to kind of monopolize it, it would seem, and market it his way, and he's still doing the same damn shit. So I'm not sure what the solution is. It's maybe more of a UFC collective. Everybody bands together. They all have X amount of stables. They all understand that, like, stables rise and fall with talent, and figure out a way to really market the whole thing, because I don't think what is working, I don't think either side is really working to grow the sport as a whole. You know?
No.
It just isn't.
I mean, look.
There's no way
to
do it this way. It's not possible to grow the sport.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I mean, the top rank has been guilty not just once but numerous times of giving us really dud fights. You know, of giving us fights already that we know the prediction, fooling us into doing. I mean, look, if you're pissed off at PBC, then you also have to be pissed off at Top Rank of making you pay for pay-per-view for Crawford and Postal. You got to be a little bit pissed about that as well. You know, so, I mean, they're all doing their way of making sure that their stables are on the better, on the greener side of the grass. So that's a definite when it comes to promoters and stuff. And I've said this numerous times. Promoters are not really – their interest in us is really not there because they know the money's going to come regardless of how much we you know, pout and bitch about it, you know. So that's
well,
why I always say –
the weird thing, too, is that
yeah.
you know, people want to – it's like when it comes time to fight Triple G, everybody else should do what's good for the sport, right? You know? But,
right.
But ultimately, you know, everybody isn't – no one's really doing that. I mean, like, is Pacquiao really that available? How many people is he really available to? What are the prices? And maybe it's true Danny Garcia turned him down. Actually, Bob Arum said that wasn't true. But
yeah, I said that. They never had one in negotiations. Right.
It's not like everybody has a red carpet rolled out looking to sing kumbaya with each other. That's why more and more I go along, the more I don't really – I'm trying not to blame any one person for it. It's kind of a collective thing. It's the way the sports run. It's not a sport. It's a business. It's just a bunch of business transactions.
Exactly. So. It's just like the way the media is as well. You know, I mean, it's not a sport. It's who do I hang out with? Who am I really chum with as a fighter and their team? You know, it's not really about having a unbiased perspective of what's in front of you in this fight game and stuff. It's about who do you hang out with after? Who do you party with after and stuff? You know, so there's a lot of broken parts in this sport. You know what I mean? It's just not with promoters. It's with supposed journalists in the sport. You know, they don't want to make corrections. So, but at the same time, they're going to bitch and moan about certain things when they shouldn't have that outlet to do that and stuff. Anyways, let's move on. Mikey Garcia, retirement is finalized. It's over. He's going to step back in the ring. He's going to, you know, recharge again, everybody. And the belief that this guy was supposed to be something great. Can he do it? Can he pick off where he left off, Gabriel? Do you see that happening?
I mean, it depends on how this fight. You know, I mean, I imagine he was living pretty clean. He didn't, any videos you saw of him in his retirement, he didn't look like he was super fat or anything. So I imagine,
right.
You know, he's been around a boxing gym. I don't know if he's been training this whole time. I haven't been reading any of the stories on him this week, to be honest. Elio Rojas has been off for a couple years himself, so it's a perfect fight for both guys. I think Mikey needs rounds. I don't think he needs a big blowout, explosive highlight reel. He's got plenty of those. What he needs is to shake off the rust, get punched in the face a couple times maybe, and just kind of get that feeling back, and then get a knockout. You know, that's the perfect scenario for him. I expect him to do that.
I you know what, I think that's the right scenario for his guy, for him, just because, you know what, it's a 2-year, is it almost what, 3-year layoff we're going into with him. I think there's questions that obviously need to be answered. I don't think we're going to get all those questions answered on Saturday night when he steps into the ring with Rojas. But I think we're going to get something there in terms of rounds. It's going to be whether or not how much can he – I mean, Rojas right now, in my mind and in his team's corner – they have to know they can capitalize on a guy that's been outside the ring. Because regardless if you've been training or doing anything, where everything counts is on that night. When there's no headgear, you're wearing smaller gloves, and there's you know, the rest period is just going to be a lot of emotions. There's going to be a lot of, you know you're going to have a lot of stamina kicking in. A lot of energy is going to be spent. And that energy with Mikey used to have before, he had like a very calm, collective style. That the guy looks just so natural. Can he pick that up again? That's what I'm interested in. Can he do that again? Can he look like a very collective person, being that there's nothing that's going to overwhelm him, nothing that's going to overexcite him? He's just going to be the technician that he once was. Now, granted, I've never been a fan of Michael Garcia. Yes, go ahead. Everybody boo and start, you know, lock him up. Lock him up. I've never been I've never been a fan of Mikey Garcia. I just don't see it. I've never saw what everybody else have said. I have found him to be one of the more boring guys to watch. Lock him up. You know, I hope that this layoff has took it away from him. Yeah, mix it up. I hope that this layoff has actually taken a little bit away from him to make him that just bit more vulnerable, so he can look a little bit more exciting, Gabriel. That's what I'm hoping. Saturday night.
I'm hoping. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, you and I both, like I said, you know, it's like watching a sniper set up for like a day, you know, like, yeah, he gets his kill and it's pretty accurate. I mean, it's, you know, it's usually sudden and explosive, but boy, getting there has always been kind of painful to watch. Punches on layaway. I think maybe the weight too. I'm curious to see him at a higher weight, see him if he's more comfortable and lets his punches go. I think a lot of times, you know, the making weight process and the rejuvenation process, guys don't do it right, and they don't come back correctly, and we lose a lot of it on the scale. So hopefully this will be good for him.
Yeah, it's going to be a good way of finding out whether or not the weight fits him. The layoff is not too effective against him. If Rojas and his team did their homework and have a great understanding that they can actually put this guy back into retirement, or just give him something to remind him that, hey, don't take another layoff that long again. The curiosity, too, is to me is, did he stay working with his father? Because to me, the telling is going to be is, did he work with his brother? If he worked with his brother, we're going to see a lot of flaws. Because I hate to tell folks, man, I've told this to numerous folks, and they've argued with me. I'm sorry, Robert Garcia may be a really cool dude. I mean, he is a cool dude. I've talked to him. I've met him. But he's not a good coach. He just really isn't. It was evident on that undercard as well. He has one style. His dad, to me, is the far better trainer. You know, his dad, to me, is the guy that has a lot more tools in the bag than Robert. And, you know, I know some folks are going to disagree, but just look at the pattern. Just looking at the pattern of his fighters. They all fight the same. They all have the same mistakes. And we'll find out with Mikey Garcia. I have him winning.
Wow.
But I have him winning in a very, I would say, of somewhat of a tough fight. You know, I mean, their pick with Rojas is actually a good one because he is coming off a layoff as well. But this, to me, just all depends on Mikey, man. I don't know what you think. I think this all depends on Mike.
No, I think this is the right guy. You know, Rojas is ripe for a stoppage victory. I don't think he poses a threat, but we'll see. You know, he hasn't fought since August of 2014. His last loss, you know, he went the distance with Johnny Gonzalez, and then he came back with a win after that. But that was also against Johnny Gonzalez. That was 2012. When he had that loss, and he was offered 2 years, comes back, gets an 8-round decision, offer another 2 years. So who knows, what Elio Rojas is going to even show up. The kid, is a little bit old at this point. We'll see.
Really, really quick, because, you can always reach me at leavingtheRing@gmail.com. And one of my questions here is, hey, what are you guys' thoughts about Amir Khan talking about going to UFC or MMA? My thoughts? Come on, man. If gloves that are patent can hurt you really bad, dude, you have no business going in UFC. I think that whole thought that, because you have a competitive spirit, doesn't mean you have to, it just spells all bad for Amir Khan. He needs to stop. I think he needs to retire. I think he's done. Like to see, the kid really got enough money just right into the sunset. Enjoy your rest of your life. Enjoy everything with your family. There's no reason to really try to damage yourself. That's my thought about him talking about making the crossover.
Good. Do you really want to add elbows into the mix?
And knees.
Ground?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No. I think his old lady needs to step up, and his friends, and he tell him, like, dude, seriously.
But it's just a whole, if you don't have a ground game, and you're not rolling at a guy with his name, the kind of access, the kind of match you would have access to. I wonder if he could even really get licensed as an MMA guy. I don't know what, does he have ground game when he used to wrestle?
Well, dude, a guy with his last, highlight of his fight is going to be him sleeping. Do you really think anybody from the UFC world is going to be – they're going to find him as any threat? They're going to welcome it. They're definitely going to welcome it because they're going to have the brag of, look, we beat one of your guys' top guys. It just spells bad. He's made some pretty bad decisions, but he's nuts.
Dude, even if you're not a wrestler, you don't have that facet of your game. It's just – you're just going to get taken down and beaten.
Right.
Silly,
he's really heavy topped. He's very heavy top, but look at his legs. I could shoot for his legs and take him down.
I can picture exactly. It would look a lot like the James Toney fight. Just get him.
Yeah,
get him to the ground.
The James Toney looked like a baby seal being choked out. I remember that. I heard my son Elias was sitting right next to me. We were watching it, and Elias is like, "Why is that big man choking out that baby seal, Dad?" That was whoa. Yeah, I know, man. But so what do we learn today here on Leaving the Ring? Well, we learned today that I thought that Crawford was entertaining. Montoya didn't. We learned that.
Nick, Mix it up.
Mix it up. We learned that he shouldn't be on another pay-per-view scale for any reason at this time and stuff, unless, to me, in my opinion, if he jumps up at 147, I think that's the only possible way he's going to get Manny Pacquiao. But I think that he has to understand, and his team have to understand, that the demands are going to be in the favor of Pacquiao. We need to get that across. The demands are going to be with Pacquiao, okay? What else did we learn? That Mikey Garcia is making a comeback, and Rojas is the right guy for him to make that comeback, okay? We also learned here on Leaving the Ring that Carl Fratman actually has one guy right now, Joe, who's picking him. He's rooting him, picking him to win, and everybody else is probably thinking, no. Me and Gabriel Montoya are going for Santa Cruz. We think that, you know, the volume puncher is going to have more volume and more pressure on Carl than he's ever had in his career at the moment. So I'm going with Santa Cruz. I think Santa Cruz stops him in the later rounds. What do you got here really quick, Gabriel?
He might stop him in the later rounds. Maybe more of a decision kind of fight. Depends on how Frampton holds up. You know, there's a lot of questions with those 4 pounds. It's hard to make a prediction, but I'm going with Santa Cruz somehow.
Okay, so what else have we learned here? Danny Garcia and Andre Berto, if it happens in September, like Gabriel said, if Danny Garcia is not that good, the retractors of Danny Garcia shouldn't be that too upset, because then Berto is a live underdog. He should be able to make it very competitive to the point where he could win this one. I think that's it. That's all we've learned here on Leaving the Ring. That's all we've talked about. I think that's all we have to offer here on Leaving the Ring on this segment here. Hey, you can catch us every Wednesday night here at 6 p.m. What you're going to add to, Gabe? What do you got?
Well, this is kind of how sad, how far Adonis Stevenson has fallen. He's fighting on Friday, and we forgot about
with
it.
With Williams.
On Spike TV.
With Williams.
Yeah, that's actually going to be a good fight, I think. Thomas Williams Jr. I think it's going to be a good fight because Williams is awkward. He can be hit. But he could hit like a brick shit house. Both guys can be hurt. Could be a good fight. But we learned that we don't really care about Adonis Stevenson that much. So there's that.
Superman is dead to us. Superman is dead. That's what we've learned here on Leaving the Ring. Superman is dead. Every Monday night, you got the next round with Steve Kim and Gabriel Montoya. I'm happy I'm not getting the charged at, because, like I said, you know, on Monday night, man, you guys, everybody on there was pretty heavy. You know, they were like, no, I paid for this. It's bullshit. But hey, I don't blame you guys, man. It was a great show, great segment. I just thought it was fantastic. Everybody was on there. It was like the hate Crawford moment of the next round and stuff.
That's pretty funny.
So good for you guys,
I thought
man.
We at least get the Steve story. You know, I thought we would at least get that. Like, the, you know, just to cap it all off, you know. I told the Andre Ward story, getting kicked out of the gym. I thought we'd get story time with Steve. But, you know, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
Stays in Vegas, right. Absolutely. Again, on Tuesdays, you got In the Squared Circle with Felipe Leon. He ate crow, but it wasn't very sincere, even though he said it was and stuff. But, you know, every other week on Thursday night, you're going to get the 2-minute round. Hey, man, if you haven't checked that out, it's an all-dedicated female boxing show. It's a great show. You got to tune in. Felipe Leon's on there. He's the head host with David Avila and Baby Girl Reed and stuff. So catch that. Again, hey, man, everybody that calls in, listen to the show, thank you for tuning in. And I expect all you guys' tweets, and I always look forward to all your guys' emails to Leaving the Ring Radio. If you didn't have a chance to call in or ask us anything or even send your way your thoughts and your debate, no worries. We'll catch up with you guys later on next week. Again, Gabriel Montoya, thanks for being on the show with me, man. It's always a pleasure. It's always fun. Remember, have a safe weekend, everybody, in the fights. Don't drink and drive, because you will spill your beer. This is your host, Dave Duenas, a.k.a. 97 Ruth, with Mr. Gabriel Montoya, the dark cloud. We can't even use that. You're not even angry anymore, dude. I got to come up with something better. I don't like the Golden Gate of Montoya. That doesn't fit you, you know. It's too Castro for me, man.
You're still scarred by that. That's funny.
I am, yeah. Very scarred for that. I'm still upset that you took me there. You didn't even give me a heads up about it. And then we're sitting there, and people are talking to us because they thought we were a couple. that is always going to be in the back of my head. And any other spot you decide to take me in San Francisco, I'm always going to say, dude, are you taking me somewhere that I should know about? You know? All right. Anyways, you guys have a great night, man. Again, next week. See everybody. Thank you.
Peace.